I'm Ed Fredenberg. I'm a sort of lifetime low-level activist, I think I'd call myself. I've been involved in all sorts of things, from sort of troops out to the miners to, but particularly to Palestine, which I've been involved in for, I don't know, several decades now. What else can I say? What other information can I give?
Well, that's all. I mean, if you're a member of the Labour Party, are you Jewish? Or that might make some difference to people's understanding.
I'm not Jewish myself. My partner's Jewish, anti-Zionist Jewish. I'm technically still a member of the Labour Party, but I've been suspended now for, I think it's about 3 years, and nobody's ever bothered to tell me anything about reason or you know, activate any sort of process. So
do you know why you were suspended?
No, not really. No, they said something about possibly, it was terribly vague. They were told that I might have brought the party into some form of disrepute, but they were only told that, you know, so they didn't feel it was necessary to confirm it or investigate it or anything.
Now you're a campaigner for Palestine. Why is that? What is the issue here, do you think?
The issue is it's the longest occupation in history, I think, and possibly apart from the Romans in Britain. But it's extremely violent. It's quite clearly an attempt to push out the native population absolutely entirely, and it's going very well for the Israelis. They've been absolutely ruthless. They destroy all forms of survival, of living, of earning a proper family supporting income. Just about everything is destroyed or undermined. They pull down houses, they uproot olive groves, they destroy factories, and of course they kill a lot of people, particularly in Gaza, where they bombard, and they clearly aim at children. They aim at children partly to disable them, to kill them, and to stop their education by bombing schools and so on. So it is the most disgusting, ongoing, ruthless. It's, as Desmond Tutu said, it's worse than apartheid, because apartheid, we never actually had bombs dropping on, Soweto or anything. So that's really, and I suppose because my lifetime partner is Jewish and she's been involved. I actually met her when both of us were leaving Israel in 1965, I think. So that's probably where my involvement began to start. Well, it wasn't political then.
It's interesting that your partner being Jewish, I suppose, puts an extra edge on this. What do you make of this whole Zionist project? Because, I mean, some say that there is a legitimate reason why Jews might wish to return to the Holy Land. It's just that they're doing it the wrong way.
I'm not going to go into the whole sort of argument about do Jews have any right of return. If we're going to discuss right of return, we have to discuss Palestinian right of return, at least on an equal basis. And it's such a tenuous story, Jewish right of return to somewhere that very few of them have ever been to before they began going back, before the Zionist project got underway. It's just a farce, and I don't have an awful lot of sympathy for it. I don't feel an awful lot of need to sort of investigate it. So, you know, call me ruthless, but that's my line on it. It's been used as a cover. It's so blatantly a cover. And it's interesting to look at what the cover is about. The cover initially was quite clearly to get rid of Corbyn and Corbyn's manifesto. And, of course, John McDonnell and everyone else who went along with it. And that's been so clear. That, you know, anyone who seriously, honestly believes Corbyn is any form of racist or anti-Semite is just not being honest. It's absolute hypocrisy. He's been, there isn't an MP who's got a stronger record of anti-racist struggle, and that includes struggle against anti-Semitism. So I think that's just not to be taken seriously. What is to be taken seriously is what is the reason behind it? Why were they so terrified? Why is the establishment, the mainstream media, and the Labour right wing, the machine, the party machine, the union machinery, everybody was determined to get rid of Corbyn? And that raises a whole lot of questions. So I think the key one is that actually, in order to sustain neoliberalism, which is an incredibly successful economic strategy, which has now been running since God knows when, whenever Milton Friedman set it up, I suppose. But it's been incredibly successful. It's produced billionaires. It's produced sort of, you know, the tax havens and neoliberalism together have allowed the proportion of billionaires in the world and the proportion of wealth that they control so absolutely colossal, as against the impoverishment of huge sections of the world, including in Britain. I mean, there's an article in, I think it's in the Eye today, about this teacher who began investigating children who were coming into school, this is primary school children, coming into school really tired. And she said to one of them, "Why are you tired?" He said, "Because I sleep on the floor." And she said, "You sleep on the floor?" And she actually went round to the home to investigate. And she found not just that family, but she began to investigate families of other kids in her class and her school. She found that a whole load of them were living on floors, and some families had one chair in the entire... The level of poverty is absolutely disgusting. We were the country that, after the war, when we were almost bankrupt, we were able to set up an NHS. We were able to start a program of social house building. They, quote, gave us the welfare state. An enormous amount of public wealth was established when we were practically bankrupt. Now, when we're absolutely rolling in money at the top level, we can't afford to provide, allow any sort of living level that's sustainable for a large part of the population. So it's sustaining that system that I think they were so terrified by the Corbyn project, because, you know, it didn't just affect Corbyn or the Labour Party. It affected Europe was watching it. You know, the Bloco in Portugal was watching. Obviously, Podemos in Spain was watching it. All the countries in Europe were watching it to see if it would take off and if it could survive. And I'm sure the fact it didn't survive has had a devastating effect on actually, yes, on the left across Europe, but on society as a whole, and stop it from going on. But so many things that Corbyn was fighting for are now desperately needed, and in such an obvious way that you can see what the struggle has been about.
Ed, you know, we've seen also the death of Desmond Tutu over the holiday, and I know that you're quite annoyed about some of the coverage because they haven't really mentioned that he was a big campaigner on Palestine. It's something that you would have expected, you know, a newspaper, for example, like The Guardian, to have picked up on.
Yes, it's sort of universal silence on Tutu's support for Palestine, isn't it? Tutu's comments on Israel's behaviour, particularly in Gaza, have been, well, he supported BDS. I don't know, it's like there's a sort of coming together of the media. I think the media is a pretty suspect part of the establishment, and nobody's going to talk about Tutu and Palestine. The Guardian, I think, has a particular role because it's the sort of mainstream media that speaks to the left, or did anyway. And it's actually led, hasn't just followed, hasn't just gone along with it, it's actually led the attack on Corbyn and Corbynism, you know, with its sort of commissar-in-chief Friedland and its rather pathetic editor, Catherine Viner. And also, it's not just that, it's sort of interesting to see the things that come together. You know, The Guardian has been roped into the D-notices committee, which it wasn't under Hetherington. And it wasn't until really he'd gone and Catherine Viner came in, and is it Paul Johnson, I think, now sits on the D-notices committee. And that has obviously how the state on its sort of official level, it's, you know, below the table, official level, keeps an eye on things like The Guardian and makes sure it doesn't sort of publish any more WikiLeaks stuff and doesn't support Julian Assange or anything like that. So I think there's a network that goes on, and the silencing of Tutu's support for Palestine is just one part of that.
If you had the ear of Keir Starmer, what would you be telling him? What direction do you think he would listen? What do you think the direction should the party be taking?
I think, quite honestly, he's made the Labour Party pretty well irrelevant. Of course, that's a personal opinion, but you've only got to look at what's happening with Labour Party CLPs all around the country, with sort of people just saying, I can't campaign for this party anymore. And Starmer's criticised even by the Tories, even by some of his own right wing, as just being ineffective, having no concept of what's required for an opposition party at the moment. I mean, so much that needs opposing. There's so much going on by the Tories that needs to be exposed. Actually, they're criminals and they shouldn't be running the country. There should be lawsuits against them. There should certainly be a massive campaign by an opposition party. And Starmer's just not the person to do it. Starmer, I think, has got connections with, in fact, he's a member of the Trilateral Commission. And I think the Trilateral Commission is a sort of grey body that exerts influence in a quite serious way and is very, very little known. And he's a member of it and hasn't been a member very long. He's been a member more or less the time that he's been, I think it's 5 years ago, he was first elected MP in Camden. And in 5 years, he shot up to leader of the Labour Party. And that's sort of coincidentally about the same time that he's been a member of the Trilateral Commission. So, you know, I wouldn't think of suggesting there's any connection, but I think there probably is.
And what about, you know, Corbyn and people like Chris Williamson, etc., setting off and starting? I mean, this is the kind of thing that Nigel Farage did quite effectively on the right, when Tommy Robinson started taking over UKIP, or infiltrated it anyway. When is there going to be some sort of move on the left? Because it doesn't seem as if there has been a serious move to create an alternative left party, which people like Ken Livingstone and Jeremy Corbyn could quite successfully bring a lot of members over.
It's difficult, isn't it? I think even Jeremy Corbyn, I think, is probably so wedded to the Labour Party. It's a sort of political lifetime, a kind of family relationship. I think it would take a hell of a lot for Corbyn to go along with any attempt to set up another party. But I think it would be fatal to try and do that. The history of setting up parties to the left of the sort of mainstream opposition is not a good history. And I agree with other people who I know you discuss with. I agree with people who say the thing to do now is to link the left inside and outside the party. Not really, this is more me, but not really to concentrate on the parliamentary aspect of things, because that's to a certain extent a dead duck. It's what people are doing in their communities in various forms of activity that are quite creative, quite strong, and some of them are kind of locally based community projects being set up, and some are campaigns like Extinction Rebellion. What else? There's just millions of them, you know, Black Lives Matter and so on. And I think it's the coming together of all those forces. There's not much sign of them coming together. There's not much sign that people see a united left as anything more than a danger, really, which is about the most depressing thing you could say. But I think it's true.
I'll just to round up, I'll ask you a specific question, which I ask a lot of people on the left. And it's like, if you could name a couple of news outlets, given that The Guardian has gone the way of all flesh. For now, anyway, as has the Starmer Labour Party, where's a good place, do you think, to pick up on national and international news nowadays?
In a way, it's quite good, because it means that if you want to pick up on news, you actually have to do a bit of searching. And I guess I would say you can go to the Canary, you can go to Squawk Box, you can go to Double Down News, but there's other more international ones. Actually, even Al Jazeera can be useful at times. In fact, actually, Russia Today can be useful, as long as it doesn't particularly concern Russia's specific interests, in which case, ignore it.
Thanks very much for joining us, Ed Friedenberg.
You're very welcome.